Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Welcome to Tabby Hour.
Thank you. Super excited to be here.
So today we have Laura Etta, bartender extraordinaire at Urban Ren, jiu-jitsu fighter. I can't say...
Coach,
I'm sorry. Jiu-jitsu coach joining us here on Tabby Hour. So Laura, welcome. Well, glad you're here.
Welcome to me. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know why I just welcomed you, but hey.
Well, yeah, we're excited to have you on. We met a few weeks ago at Urban Ren and just kind of heard a little bit about you and said, okay, you got to be on the podcast. So
thanks.
Thank you for being here. I want to kind of get to know you a little bit and you can tell your story. I'm curious about the MMA / jiu-jitsu / bartender / everything else you got going. So why don't you... tell us about yourself.
Yeah, all those things put together. Well, yeah. I don't do MMA anymore. I used to do some kickboxing and mixed martial arts all together.
Nice.
But now I do jiu-jitsu at Alliance Jiu-Jitsu on Haywood Road, if anybody wants to come hang
out
with us. Yeah, is that all right? I'm shouting us out. I've been doing that for almost 10 years at this point, actually.
Nice.
And yeah, that's one thing I really appreciate about bartending is that I can... bartend in the evenings and then I have my days free to do jiu-jitsu. So it's like I have really long days, but they're very fulfilling. And it's a nice balance. It's like, you know, bartending, I get to meet people, I get to make drinks for people, I get to entertain people. And then jiu-jitsu, I get to fight people and teach people how to fight people.
Take out all the aggression from bartending out on the mat.
Yeah, it's a nice combination. It's a good change. Before I was a bartender, I actually was a scientist and I worked in a lab and I spent a lot of time by myself and I didn't really like being caged off and just having to like sit there and pipette all day. It like sounds cool to tell people you're a scientist, but in reality, like if you ask people what their daily life is like,
yeah,
it's a lot of sitting around and like staring at computers and running tests. And I am definitely introverted, but I like people more than that, you know? Like yeah. I wanted to be around people
you
more.
You need the interaction.
Yeah. So like that job, like the lab shut down, which kind of forced me to get a different job. And this is like my bartender origin story. I literally went out for beers with friends from the lab. We were just kind of like, man, we all don't have jobs anymore. And one of the guys at the lab introduced me to one of the girls that was a bartender. We were at Blockhouse, actually. And she was like, so you need a job and I like your personality. Do you want to be a bartender? And I was like, yes, I do. Even though I'd never bartended
before. Never done it.
I was like, I think I nerdily said something like, I have a chemistry degree. Does that help? Which is like kind of douchey and dorky all at the same time.
So when did you decide, like, how did you decide chemistry?
That's a great question. My parents really wanted kids who were like, doctors and lawyers and whatnot.
It's sort of forced.
A little bit, yeah. They would probably be pissed if they heard me say that because I don't think they want me to
She chose
that.
It willingly.
Yeah, that's yeah, totally. Wanted. It was actually the like really real explanation is that I was in college. I went to USC in Columbia and my business advisor was like, hey, you're not taking any business classes. I don't know why you're in the business school. Can you maybe pick a major? And he like pushed two papers towards me. One was like pre-med and one was pre-law. And he was like, maybe you want to consider these. And I was like, cool. I'm doing chemistry classes right now and I'm not having to study for them and I'm getting good grades. So like, what can I do with that? And he was like, pre-med. And I was like, sounds great. And yeah, which is like a terrible reason to pick any of them.
You rolled the dice.
Whenever I was graduating high school, I knew I had to go to college because my parents said, you have to go to college. And I was like, okay. And I had no plans. I had no clue I wanted to do. I didn't understand myself well enough to know what I wanted to do. And I just knew like I had to be there. And they plan out your first couple semesters for you. You do a lot of intro classes and I was taking classes like photography and pottery and like all this random crap through the Honors College that I was like, this is cool that I get to do this. And my advisor was like very frustrated because I wasn't picking
None
anything.
None of these add up to a degree.
Yeah, I was like, I was satisfying my like hourly requirements so I could keep my scholarships, but I wasn't taking anything that was like counting towards a degree, which is hilarious. Like I ended up getting an award and like added to some honor society for like taking a lot of random classes.
How many credits did you end up with? Like 200?
Almost 200, yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
I did summer school too. It was
USC
professional student.
You. So you
yeah,
went,
I gave
so
him a lot of money.
You graduated college with a chemistry degree.
I did. Yes.
And first job.
Yeah. Oh, Well, I was still working, not in a chemistry job. I was working at Historic Columbia Foundation in Columbia, and I was giving tours of historic houses, which prior to bartending was my longest standing job, literally talking about historic houses and giving tours. They were like hour-long tours, and they were guided, and everything was decorated. So I talk about like the architecture and the history that was relevant to the time, which was not my major at all. And then people would be like, you must be a history major. And I was like, I'm doing pre-med. It's very weird. And yeah, so I worked at Historic Columbia after I graduated, and I was trying to get chemistry jobs and just like wasn't getting them. I was planning on going to med school. I took the MCAT twice. I got the same score literally twice in a row. And I was like, precision over accuracy.
Always a win.
Literally
always
what I said in my med school interview, and they thought it was funny, thankfully. But I didn't want to go to med school back then. And I just like, I'd worked so hard towards it. I was like, screw it, I'll go anyway. Again, a terrible reason to go to med school. And I got in. This is great, right? Yeah. I got in, and my mom was so excited that I got in that she said, hey, since you have a year before you go to school, if you want to go to Israel for half a year, like, why don't you do that? And I was like, sounds great. Just yes, man, you know? And I think that she thought I was going to go do like some kind of medical science-y thing. And instead, I looked at these like 200 program options, and I picked the one that was living on a farm in the middle of nowhere with like a compost toilet and an outdoor shower and like studying permaculture and learning to grow my own food and like doing medicinal herbs and studying Hebrew and like social justice issues. And my parents were so embarrassed. They didn't tell anybody where I was for half a year.
But how was that time for you? I mean, that had to be,
it was so much life changing. Yeah. Yeah. It was very therapeutic. It helped me go from like a person who didn't know myself at all and who would just say yes to whatever, because I was like, sure, sounds great. I don't know what I want to do, so I'll just do that. It helped me like grow into myself, and I learned a lot of like self-awareness and responsibility, which I'm super thankful for. One of my like crowning achievements in my mind, well, two actually, is we hiked from our farm to Jerusalem, which was like 55 kilometers, and we just walked the whole way. And it was brutal. Like, slept outside, went and bought food at like whatever store we were walking by, and just like made the pilgrimage. It's like a throwback to an old school tradition they did a really long time ago. And after that, I was kind of like, wow, I can do things for myself, you know? Like, I just took care of myself for this whole, I don't want to do the math, whatever 55 is divided by 2.2, but that was a lot of miles to walk, and we did it in like 3 days. And then my other, so like after that, I was really inspired to like plan a hiking trip for a group. So I left the farm with my little group of people, and like I led a hike up north in Israel, and I like organized the whole thing, and I organized our campground, and like I am not fluent in Hebrew, but like I spoke to people enough to like get to where we needed to go. And it was a success. And I was like, I planned this, I executed it, I like got the map. And it was also very, it was very freeing, because one of my teachers on the farm sat me down, and he was like, hey, I love that you want to go and do this trip. Let me give you the tools to do it. And he sat me down and like showed me the maps and talked to me about how to identify trail markers. And like, he empowered me to go do this thing for myself, which is something that I hadn't experienced before that. So that was really valuable. And I still think about that voyage in particular, because it empowered me to like take care of myself and do things for myself. And then having another adult look at me and be like, hey, you're an adult, you can make choices for yourself.
Very validating.
So two quick points to that. So one is, you push yourself physically, obviously going 55 kilometers in however many days.
Yes.
So that was, you know, that probably taught you some stuff, you know, some things about yourself that you didn't know, like you said, but
yeah.
Learning another language, is it best to learn it in another culture, immersed in it? Is that what you would recommend for anybody else? It's like, because everyone wants to learn a second language or a third language, but it's part of it is just being in the culture, right? Being it wherever really it is that you're trying to learn, and learning it from the natives, right?
Yeah. I speak Hebrew and French both very badly. And I've only been in Paris for like a brief moment when I was stopping over in the airport, and I like bought a bottle of champagne in French and was very excited about it. But they looked at me like, wow, you sound very American. So I would say, right. Yeah. And I worry about that, you know, like if I don't sound authentic enough. I remember, and I will answer your question. This is a long way of answering it, but I remember going to the doctor in Israel because I fell off of a 6-foot-tall fence and caught myself on my hand. So I had to go get my hand x-rayed, and there was a doctor there who was like fluent in Hebrew, and he was speaking it without even trying to have an Israeli accent. Like he mm-hmm. was just full force American accent speaking Hebrew. And I was like, damn, dude, like you're not even trying, which for me was like a big deal. I was like, oh, they know you're American. And I was like, you know, why does it matter? So my advice to people to answer your question who are trying to learn another language is like, be fearless while learning it, yeah. you know? And like, if people are going to laugh at your accent, they're rude for laughing at you yeah. if you're learning something. I know whenever I hear people speak English and they have an accent, I think it's more beautiful than regular English.
Yeah.
I know other people in other languages don't always feel that way about American speaking their language, but like, whatever. And in the long run, it doesn't matter. Like you try, you practice. And I think it's a lot more effective to be surrounded by people that speak that language. And then also if people revert to English as soon as they hear you speaking English and your American accent, like tell them that you want to practice. I had a cab driver that was like my go-to guy while I was in Israel. I'd just like call him up and he'd come pick me up when I needed to leave the farm. Which now that I'm saying that out loud sounds really weird.
Major speed dial Uber.
Yeah. Yeah. He was fantastic, but he would always be like, all right, Laura, like today we're going to work on your Hebrew while we're driving to town. And I was,
tutor.
Yeah, he was great. But, back then I was a lot more self-conscious than I am now. And so I was very hesitant to speak Hebrew with him because I was scared of making a mistake. And that's like the biggest block to progress is if you're just so scared to make a mistake that you don't try. So
that's a good segue. I think when you talk about being fearless, I mean, that's huge, right? People oftentimes are worried about what other people think, right?
Yeah.
And that parlays well into, you know, your other ventures in, I'm not going to call it MMA. I'm going to say you took a chance and you, so let's pivot into that and we can get into Urban Ren and kind of your other story. But
yeah.
How did you get into that? How did you get into coaching?
Yeah. So how long were you in Israel?
I was in Israel for 5.5 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So I left like the day before Valentine's Day and I came back a couple days before med school started.
Cool.
I hated being back in the U.S. No offense to the U.S. I just like, it was a culture shock. And
a culture shock coming back.
It was like, I literally went to the grocery store and I looked at all these vegetables on the shelves. This is so embarrassing now. But I cried, like I sobbed in the grocery store, and like saying it now, it's like, I don't have the same emotional reaction anymore. But back then I was looking at all these vegetables and I was like, I used to grow all of this myself. I'd have to come to a store for all of this. I walked outside and I picked it, and it, you know, it stays fresh because it's in the ground. If you don't pick it, we had like a little tiny refrigerator, but we only use it for necessities. And I've been living that way for 5.5 months, and just, it was so hard to come back. And I felt helpless, honestly, which was a weird realization. And they did try to work with us to like help us understand like how we were going to transition back into like living and regular everyday life in the U.S. when we came back. But I cried a lot and I was really sad when I was here. And it went away gradually, but I still have days sometimes where I feel that same way, just not to that extent. But it was a very unique way of living. It's not sustainable. Like I can't just like go live in a dome hut with canvas and wood as my living.
I was gonna say, coming back to air condition, and I mean, that's not so bad.
Yeah, no, but honestly, like, you know, whenever it was so hot that we couldn't like work, we would rest and we'd sit and tell stories or play music. We'd wake up really early. Whenever it started to get hot outside, we'd wake up super early, have coffee time together, go work in the fields for a little bit.
It was a sabbatical.
Yeah. And then, you know, take a break, make breakfast together as a community. There were 12 of us total. And it was like we worked with the natural cycles of the earth. So, and then whenever it got dark outside, like we got tired and went to bed. We had like a candle maybe, or like a flashlight. But I had the best dreams I've ever had in my life for, you know, 5.5 months. I was like super healthy. Like I was just like, all around, it was just a really unique, like beautiful experience. So, yeah.
So how did you get into fighting?
Yeah. So, I came back, I did my year of medical school, and I asked if I could leave med school at the end of the year. It's like my heart wasn't in it. And I finally felt empowered to like speak up for myself. And I remember sitting in the dean's office and just saying to them, I was like, look, if this is really what I was meant to do, then I would feel better about my life. And I really don't like this. I would like to be able to leave. And they were like, yeah, that's fine. You're allowed to. And I was like, really? Thank you. And that same week that I quit med school, is the week that I took my first martial arts class. And that was something that I had actually wanted to do for probably my whole life. And I had kind of forgotten about it. I actually had an aunt tell me like a couple years ago, she was like, you know, Laura, when you were a little kid, you were so feisty and assertive. And I was like, I remember being a little kid and being scared to talk to people. So like, what kid did you meet? Are you confusing me with
somebody else?
Yeah. And she was like, no, like you were very vocal. You didn't mind telling people if they bothered you. You know, she's like, I really like that about you. And I was like, well, somewhere down the line that went away. And then I got it back. I actually got approached in Israel by a guy who I later found out was he's an Olympic judo champion for Israel. And I didn't know that at the time. And he asked me to stay in Israel and train with him for 5 months. So, and I could have done it if I like had turned down med school and stayed. And I was really scared to say no to med school because I felt like I had to come back and do it. And I had like never done martial arts at that point. And so I thought he was crazy. I was like, how could you look at me?
What did
and,
he like, see like in you?
He made me do a couple, like now that I know judo, I understand that like it was actually good that I could do these things. I thought everyone could probably do them. But he made me do a couple little demos. He was like, hey, like we were at this, like, it's basically a job fair, but it's for MASA is like the big program. So like MASA has all these different, like 200 different programs you could do anywhere from like a month to a year. And his like little booth at this fair was like across from ours. And he came over and he was like, he kept asking me if he could have some of the fruit in our basket that we'd picked. And I picked all these loquats and I was like, yeah. And I was kind of like rifling through and like picking out the really nice ones. Cause like, I wanted to give this like precious little old man some nice loquats. And he kept doing that a couple times. And I was like, what is he doing with these fruits? Why does he keep asking me for more fruit? Like, didn't he eat the ones I gave him? And then he was like, you're very attentive to detail. And I was like, yeah, kind of OCD, I'm aware. And then he was like, come here, I want you to try something. Have you ever done judo? And I was like, no. And he was like, okay. And he showed me like, he grabbed one of his students and he was like, here, like, and he showed me how to do this move. It was like a basic like leg throw. And he was like, I want you to do that. And I did it. And he was like, very good. And like, he did that a couple more times. And I was just thinking like, I feel like if he grabbed anybody in this group, they would be able to do this, you know? And so he was like, I want you to stay. I don't want you to go back to the US and I want you to train with me. And I was like, no. And now I kick myself for that because that would have been really cool. I literally looked him up while I was in med school, like in a class one day. I was like, who was that guy? And I like looked him up and he was like saved in my phone. And
why didn't you hit him up again?
I tried and I could have gone back, but I would have had to have paid the full price for the program instead of getting a scholarship. Gotcha. Yeah, so it was like $6,000 if I had gone back at that point. And as it turns out, when you leave med school, you can't just shell out $6,000 for some judo training in Israel. anyway, so
there's no grant for that.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, there's not. It was like a one-time thing. Like it could have only worked if I stayed and continued that program instead of leaving. But anyway, it worked out. I do judo now too. But yeah, so I was like, maybe that man wasn't so crazy. You know, maybe there's something to this. Maybe the fact that I've wanted to do this my whole life is relevant. And I went and I took a class and I loved it. And I've been doing it ever since. I've switched gyms a couple of times because I went from like just doing self-defense to doing mixed martial arts with like a kickboxing emphasis. And then from there, I progressed to doing jiu-jitsu because I was actually cross training. So I thought I was going to be an MMA fighter that was going to be in Vegas and the UFC. And like that was my whole plan for myself. And I really wasn't happy with like my ground skills. I was great at like the stand up, but I wasn't great at being on the ground. And I was like, man, someone's going to be like, just take that girl down and then you can, you know, ground and pound because she can't do anything on the ground. And I was like, I want them to think that and then be really surprised when I also have jiu-jitsu skills. So I was trying to like be sneaky and train at Alliance on the side. And then I went there and I saw their jiu-jitsu and I was blown away. And to me, like the best way I can describe my impression there is like, because I've been doing jiu-jitsu before that, just never in the gi. And for anyone, I don't know if y'all know, but like you can do jiu-jitsu like without being in a gi, which like the gi is like your traditional kimono looking thing. And that's like where you wear your belt and have your rank. Or there's no gi, which is literally just like you train at like a rash guard and like spats or shorts. Yeah. So like I had been doing no gi for a while, but not in the gi. And it was like this beautiful, like almost like a dance, but like an aggressive, like I can kick your butt dance. And I wanted to do it. And I was like, done. All right. And I had actually like not liked jiu-jitsu that much up to that point. I preferred striking and I really like kicking and punching. And then whenever I started doing jiu-jitsu, I was like, this is so hard, like very mentally taxing and challenging. And I feel like I will never get to where I know all of this stuff. It's like as soon as you think you've like mastered something or like a particular move, it's like, all right, now that you know how to do that, you can go do like, it's like a like family tree of stuff that just like sprawls out from there. And it's just amazing. And the sport's still evolving too. And people are coming up with new moves. And it's just like, it's really cool to be part of it. So
I got hooked. I've got a question. So MMA or jiu-jitsu or any martial arts, mental versus physical, like kind of, I haven't been an MMA fighter, which is surprising, I'm sure, to a lot of people. But
you're doing all those push-ups. You know?
But just, I've heard from people who've actually like sparred and been in the ring with somebody when you literally know that they're trying to rip your face off and you're trying to, you know, basically, you know, survive in advance or whatever. But like, how do you prepare for a match, or how do you prepare for a spar? Like mentally, is it like more physical or is it mental? Like once you're in the ring, like once you're there, basically there's in there.
It's both. Yeah. So jiu-jitsu events and jiu-jitsu competitions are a little bit different from like an MMA competition. I think a lot of people think of martial arts and they think of like the traditional octagon that you see in UFC, for example. And for jiu-jitsu, usually we have like 8 different mats and you've got matches going on these mats all at the same time. You've got people yelling, and jiu-jitsu, we always kind of laugh that like we run on Brazilian standard time, which is like things don't run on time. And so tournaments are challenging, both physical and mental for sure. And I think one of the hardest parts that's also like really beautiful, and this is where like working on your ego comes in and working on your pride, is you can be really good at jiu-jitsu. You could be the most technically gifted jiu-jitsu person out of the 2 people, and you still might lose a match.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because like for me, I grew up playing piano. So like I knew if I like learned my piano pieces and I played them for the judge, I was going to perform them perfectly and get my great score. And you win. Jiu-jitsu, you can train your ass off and then you can go in and lose horribly. And it's not because you don't know what you're doing. It's just like
you just get outpointed or what?
Yeah. So you can win a jiu-jitsu match by either points or submission.
Yeah.
And there's different positions that can get you points, and some positions are worth more than others. But it's, and sometimes I know for me, like I don't like earning points. I like just like playing my game. I like playing, you know. Jiu-jitsu is, it's like, it's not playtime in the sense of like, yay, this is so fun all the time. Like it's really physically challenging, but it is fun. Like it's a nice break from reality. My brain turns off. I'm focused on jiu-jitsu and everything else fades away. My anxiety is better after jiu-jitsu. Like my coach always laughs. He's like, you're just too tired to be anxious. That's why jiu-jitsu is good for you, because you get off the mat so you don't care about anything. But to go back to your question, like, it's both. It's physical and mental. It's like we get in there, and I used to compete. I just haven't competed in a while due to a lot of injuries, which isn't necessarily guaranteed in jiu-jitsu, so don't let that discourage you from coming to try.
That's what stops me.
Yeah. I mean, I've got like bruises right now, but they're like, you know, like you get like a knee bruise because someone has to like grind their what is this? Knuckles into your knee or something. Like it just happens. But we're used to that. But it's a lot of mindset. It's a lot of organizing your daily schedule and, you know, organizing the way you think about yourself and organizing the way you interact with people. And that's what's beautiful about it. There's a lot of metaphors you can draw between jiu-jitsu and life in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, getting ready to fight someone who's trying to take your head off, metaphorically speaking, that is a very unique experience, and there's nothing like it that you can experience in the gym with your teammates.
Right.
Because no matter how hard you're going against those are people that you know and trust for the most part. So then you get...
They like you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they like you, and they're trying to make sure that you can go to work later. Like, you know, they're going to kick your ass, but they're also going to make sure that, like, you're intact to go and, like, for me, bartend. But the times when I've squared off with another person, it's all women that I've been fighting, because whenever you're an adult, they only let you fight women. Little kids get to fight each other, both boys and girls, and I think that's great. And seeing little girls like kick the boys' butts. but you know, like, and I was just telling her this recently is that it's like you feel like that is the strongest person that has ever grabbed you and tried to fight you. Doesn't matter what they look like, or you know, if you think you're gonna get in there and like outman them or, you know, out technique them. It's like as soon as that adrenaline hits and you both, like, we do like a bump and slap in jiu-jitsu. Yep. You know, as soon as that happens and you got 5 minutes to win that thing, it is an interesting feeling, and it is a little bit terrifying. And honestly, it's I don't know how else to describe it. I think everyone should feel it at least once, especially people who think that they just know how to fight without training. You know, I hear a lot of people be like, oh, I could, you know, I could fight you. And I'm like, well, what martial art have you done? They're like, none. And I'm like, okay, like, great. I don't even have to try.
Yeah. It's a good way to get your shoulder pulled out. Exactly. Pretty
quick. Or, you know, like, there's a lot of like self-defense classes that are only geared towards women. And I love to have a self-defense class that's geared towards men and women, because men don't naturally know how to defend themselves either. They might be less likely to be targeted, but they don't know how to fight unless they're trained. You know, nobody knows how to fight unless they're trained. And there's some people that have natural talent, but you know, you never know. And then, and we have people come in the gym sometimes who are like, oh, I could fight anybody in here. And they learn really quickly that like, they're going to get their butts kicked. And that's why we do classes. And that's why you stay a student for a long time, because it's an ever evolving process.
So we know that you can kick our ass. So let's pivot into,
I'm just going to keep you safe, man.
That's all right. Perfect. Perfect. So Urban Ren, right? That's where we met you.
Yes.
Love Urban Ren. Food's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best date night spots in Greenville.
Heck yeah. I'll go ahead and say that. Classy date night spot, classy. Too. Like, feel, if you really take your date there, like, you are giving a good impression. Yeah.
No, it's solid. So, how'd you get in with them? Because, I mean, they're known in Greenville as probably the premier wine, just drink, I guess.
What are they?
What are they? I'm trying to think what they are. Other than the best, one of the best date night spots. What is
I mean, we're known for, we call it globally inspired cuisine. Our chef has his own farm, Montgomery Sky Farm. And a lot of our produce comes from his farm. So he calls it seed to table, which I think is fantastic. And that like makes my little farm heart very happy. And then we have an excellent wine program, like very diverse wines. We really try to, and you know, Travis, Darius, Mikey, they all do a good job of creating a list of wines that are varied and unexpected, and they can give you a unique experience so that you're not just like having a standard Pinot Grigio you've had, or like, you know, not something that you could just go and like buy off a shelf somewhere. It's unique. And so we try to create an experience for people that will give them something to ponder and something to like, you know, something that you wouldn't necessarily be able to do yourself. Like, we want to create that experience for you with wine and with cocktails and with food. And a lot of our food is influences, like I said, like globally, but it's a lot of different flavors from around the world, like pulled in together to these dishes. I got really excited because I kept seeing ingredients on there that I was like, I love that this chef knows what these things are.
Right.
And Chef Taylor Montgomery is, I mean, he's great. He's
world class.
He's a genius guy. Yeah.
The food's amazing. The scene is always really nice there. You guys do a nice job of presentation. But just kind of thinking about, you know, you said earlier about the bartending, you know, being able to be a bartender allows you to pursue other things, other passions throughout the day. So one of the things we've talked about with other bartenders here is like, you know, it takes a special person to be a bartender, one, but then it's also, you know, bartending in and of itself is, one, it's a craft, but just being able to kind of juggle both sides of it for you, working late night hours and then turn around and, you know, doing your passion during the day, like bartending allows you to do that. A lot of other jobs wouldn't allow you for that time. So how has that been for you, just kind of working through, you know, your full-time job, which is what, by the way,
technically am full-time at Urban Ren, but I do coach. Right now I coach 3 times a week and then I train every day, but I'm about to be coaching 4 times a week. But I'm there Monday through Saturday. So it feels like a full-time job, even though like hourly wise, it's not a full-time job. Between training and teaching, it's definitely full-time. I'm just not getting paid for all the hours that I'm getting my ass beat, you know? But I really appreciate the guys that I work for because they're super supportive of me doing jiu-jitsu. Even the week that I was doing my, I don't know how I didn't know this was going to happen, but you know, Mikey did warn me and I guess it just like went in one ear and out the other. Sorry, Mikey. But he was like, you'll have your week of training and you'll have some quizzes. And in my mind, I was thinking like, actually, I really don't know what I was thinking the quizzes would be, but those quizzes are like intense. And I was having to write out by memory, like all these different ingredients and all the dishes and then, you know, cocktails and all this. And at the same time, I was actually studying for my first jiu-jitsu instructor's course. And so those were long days. Those were longer days than I've pulled, you know, since I started actually working. But there was one day where I came in and I was like, hey, Travis, this quiz is about to look like trash. I'm just telling you right now. I was like, please don't like fire me.
How often do you have these quizzes? Is this like
It was every day during training. So we trained for a whole week, and each day it's a different thing. So like the first day you get your quiz, and I don't want to give away your information, but you know, it's like asking you about things that you were just taught the day before.
Can we see this quiz and like publish it?
I know, right? And this is what you need to know if you want to work with us. And if anyone does want to work with us, don't let this discourage you, because the point is, he was like, it's okay. We just want to see what you know so we can help you learn what you didn't know. And I was like, okay, I just want you to know, like, I have my jiu-jitsu, like, one of my final instructor course assessments this weekend. And, like, I have to make sure I get that because I want to be able to start teaching. And I was trying to do all that at the same time. And I was, like, pulling my hair out just because, you know, again, this, like, OCD former chemistry student person, I get, like, very, like, I have to have everything perfect. That came out a little bit. And I was like, oh, there she is.
which helps you in bartending,
it
right?
It really does. Yeah. I seriously, like, I'm thankful I have all that training, especially working in the lab, because it really does help. You know, labeling and dating is the same from a lab to a bar. And being careful with specs and being precise with measurements. I mean, all of those skills definitely transfer.
Very precise when you made our drinks. Like, could tell you're a chemist, precise.
People always be like, you look like a little nerdy scientist or something. I'm like, haha, like little do you know, and that's what I used to do. But yeah, no, it's it probably this job more than any bartending job is like the best balance I've ever had, because we get out a little bit earlier, so I'm not keeping those late hours. Like, I used to go to bed like 4:30 in the morning when I was bartending, up at 8 a.m. and try to go fight people at 10 a.m. and I was like, after a couple of years, that was really just not sustainable, and I thought it was, and it's not. So it's nice to be able to, I go in a little bit earlier, like we get there at 3, we do prep for an hour and a half, we have lineup, and we open at 5, and you know, on the weekdays we close at 9, usually we have people in there a little bit later, so like, you know, we don't technically close, we're not going to kick people out. But the latest I get home is like 11 or 11:30.
It's good. For a bartending job, that's like fantastic. Super early.
Why such limited hours?
Honestly, it's just like our rush time is earlier in the day. So we have people coming in for dinners or for dates. And by, you know, they used to stay open later from what I understand before pre-COVID, I started working there. I mean, I think
I guess I'm more surprised on the front end.
What do you mean? Not opening
for like 11 a.m.
Yeah, no, I mean, we get busy. We get really busy. And everything's full. We have happy hour from, you know, 5 to 7 every day, except for Saturdays and Sundays.
Well, it's supply and demand too, right? It's like the reason why Chick-fil-A closes on Sunday. It's like, exactly. I want it on Sunday and I can't get it. So Monday, what do I do?
I'm glad you understand that. Man, that's awesome. Those economics principles. Yeah, it's true though. It's like, if people really want it, they're going to wait to come get it, and they're all going to come get it at once. And that's great, because then we're full, we're busy. We're cranking it out. We're doing a great job. And I mean, realistically, we usually keep working for an hour after close and then start cleaning. But it's wonderful. And I honestly, like, it is the most teamwork oriented staff I've ever worked with. And I love that. I don't feel like I'm by myself. I don't feel like I'm ever having to handle things by myself. There's always someone I can go to for help. And I'm not in charge of, like, you know, making all the syrups or, you know, doing all the grocery shopping or doing any of that. And I don't actually go grocery shopping for them. So that's cool. But
somebody else does
it's a, yeah, it's like all of our work is very portioned out and it's balanced, and, you know, people pull up the slack when needed. And we, you know, like, sometimes I'm a food runner. Like, if the bar is quiet and I see that food needs to be run, like, I go run it. And likewise, you know, if we're slammed at the bar and maybe it's a little bit quieter out there, people come in, like, do our glass polishing for us. And it's just like, no one has to be told, like, hey, I really need help right here, come help me. It's like, everyone's very, like, they're keeping an eye on their guests, but they're also keeping an eye on their coworkers. And we all just, it's like a very well-oiled machine, and it's a huge relief to be part of that. I love that.
There's nothing better than being a part of a team that's been working together for a long time.
Yeah,
we've both had them with restaurants. You walk into that restaurant, it's like all those people have worked,
it's like a symphony,
together for years and years and years.
It really is.
There's 10 people doing different things that all make one thing go really well.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a controversial opinion about, you know, I think, like, other countries have mandate, you have to have this many years of service in the military, like Israel. I think we need 2 years in the restaurant industry. From like 16 to 18, every American needs to spend 2 years in the restaurant.
Is a real
Absolutely.
Thing.
Like, you don't graduate high school unless you've done at least, you know, 6 months in a restaurant.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Because I think people have a different appreciation of
you have to work a drive-through.
Yeah.
You have to work a drive-through window. Let's you do have it. To work as a waiter or a cook.
That's the only thing I'm going to say political ever on this show, but it's like, that's what needs
no,
to happen.
No, I
like,
stand by it. I support you.
Like, they need to, that needs to be a thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, tell you. Me you've never worked in the service industry without telling me you've never worked in the service. Like the things that people get mad about. You're like, okay, that's really out of all of our control, but that's okay.
So we talked a little bit about Tabby when we were there.
Yeah.
And kind of got you thinking about it, I think. And Brad, I'll let you jump in because you were with me. But one of the things that we're trying to do with our app is really try to bring the social piece to the going out experience and really combine it with the mobile payout. Trying to simplify that whole process. And for you as a bartender, you know, what would you rather be doing? Making drinks or closing tabs? Right?
Making drinks and talking to people. Yeah.
Probably making drinks, probably not looking up cards to close people out. So, you know, on that note, you know, that was really the origin story for us is we need to make this process better because every bar that we go to, every restaurant, that's always the pain point. It's like trying to leave that restaurant is a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. You sit there and you like keep pushing your.
It's frustrating, but in some
check
ways.
Check prisoner closer.
In some ways, people don't even know it's a problem, though. They just think, oh, yeah. I gotta
Which is part of it. Just part of it. Part of the suffering. Yeah.
It's like, what if I could just be done with this?
Yeah. Just close out and leave.
What would you say your biggest challenge is behind the bar? Like during your workflow, what's the biggest like problem that you have that?
I mean, it's really just situational. The issue that sometimes arises is just a bunch of people sit down at once and then they're all looking at you and they all want you all at the same time. And you're like, I can't go all these different directions at one time. Would you like some water? I'll be right back.
Well, and I argue too that like while you're closing somebody else's tab, you could be taking care of those.
Yes. And that is the thing is I hate standing at a computer. Yeah. Actually, it's funny. One of the things I used to get in trouble for in medicine, because I worked for a doctor for a while, is I talked to patients too much, which seems very strange. You know, why would you want to get to know your patient? But that's therefore that's something I like about bartending is I get to talk to people and learn their life stories.
Well, and your issue in medicine.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They're like, don't talk to that patient. Just prescribe them something and leave the room. I worked for an allergist. So it was interesting. It was like, you just all got a prescription for Allegra. it's a little more complicated than that. But anyway. So one of the things I love about bartending is talking to people and hearing their stories and helping them feel heard and seen. That's something that I think is missing. That's something that was missing in medicine for me was actually having people feel seen and feel like they mattered and feel like their life mattered and that their health mattered. And, you know, when people show up to the bar, it feels very similar to me from when patients showed up in an office. It's like they're there to have someone acknowledge them and to acknowledge, you know, in medicine, you call it a chief complaint. At the bar, it's just your order. But that order for me isn't just like, hi, I want food and a drink. It's like someone is coming to me at the bar because they're looking for something from me. And interacting with them requires some intuition. It requires like a conversation for me to get an idea of like, what is this person needing right now? You know, because if they didn't need anything, they'd just stay at home.
Yeah.
And people come in by themselves in groups. And sometimes people don't want to talk to the bartender and they're there with a person. And I respect that too. Make sure their water is filled. Make sure, you know, if their glass is empty, I'm going to offer them something. But for the most part, I'd say about 80% of people who come to the bar are looking for an interaction of some sort.
How many weird first dates have you seen? Like people that clearly there, like they met on Tinder and they're meeting at your bar for the first time and now you're taking care of
them. I've seen more of those at other bars. Yeah.
Urban Rinse not
the first date bar.
Tinder meetup spot.
I mean, I have seen first dates though. There's one customer in particular. I won't name drop him or anything because I don't want to do him like that. But, you know, I like actually thought to ask him, be like, hey, should I act like I don't know you? Like whenever you come in, do you want us to be like, oh, hello, sir. How are you? Or do you want to be like, oh, hey, his name isn't Jeff, but we're going to call him Jeff. Oh, hey, Jeff, like, how's it going? I was like, do you want to seem like you're like the in guy? Like we know you. And, or do you want us to not give away the fact that this is where you bring your first dates? So like, I don't know. I take the bartender code pretty seriously in that sense. I'm like, I want to make sure you have a good time. Like what experience are you trying to create for your date? Cause I'll help you with that. You know?
So I love what you said earlier about the bartender experience is similar to being in the medical field.
Thanks.
Like prescribing, I guess, libations is the same as providing prescription drugs. So that's, I've never thought about it like that, but it's like I go to a bar and you want the bartender's, you know, opinion, but mm-hmm. they don't know what you like, just like a doctor doesn't know it hurts.
Exactly.
So it's like you have to know enough about the human body or whatever specialty you're yeah. dealing with to prescribe the right.
Yes. Well,
so that's pretty
in medicine, one of the chief complaints that happens that's unaddressed is pain. Not to get too deep, but like that for me was something that really bothered me a lot, is that I literally heard physicians say, well, it's just pain. And that was like driving a stake through my heart. I was like, if someone's in pain, that should be something that as a healthcare professional, you want to address. And for me, when people come into the bar, they're not coming in with like, you know, aches and pains, but they are coming in with something that's like they need fulfilled, you know? And I prefer to address that with good food and good drinks. And I think that I've seen a lot more success in having people leave feeling happy than I ever did in a medical office.
Is there a Hippocratic oath for bartenders that you
take? Yeah, you know, like there is actually, do no harm, make sure people get home safely. I'm probably the number one person.
Do no harm too.
Yeah, do no harm. But
don't
I mean,
overpour.
That's yeah, no, I'm probably known for asking people, hey, how are you getting home tonight? And for me, I take that really seriously. I like to make sure people are having fun. I want to like create a good experience for people and I want them to be able to come back. So
you ask that.
I do. Yeah. If I feel like someone's had.
Glad we didn't get to that point when we were at Urban Run. You didn't have to ask.
No, I mean, it doesn't happen like that often, but I mean, I ask that and it's because I take people's lives very seriously. I want to make sure that they're well and that they're okay and that they had a good time. I've actually had, at a different bar I used to work for, I had a guy come back the next day and he was like, hey, you refused to serve me last night. And you also asked me how I was getting home. And he said, no one's ever actually asked me that before. And I just wanted to thank you. He was like, I went and got a taxi and I took my ass home.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm going to be more careful from now on. Whether or not he did, who knows? But I thought it was really meaningful that he came back and thanked me for that because he was a little pissed off whenever I asked him. But he came back sober and he was like, hey, like, thank you for caring. And I was like, yeah, no problem, man. Like, that's, I genuinely care. That's what I do. That's what I'm here for, you know?
That's so awesome.
Yeah. Thanks.
That's funny. Yeah. He was not happy about that.
No, at the time he was like, what? You won't give me a bourbon or whatever he was asking for. And I was like, no, I was like, you look like you've had enough. I want to make sure you get home safe. Yeah. That's another thing. Is like, well, I'm, you know, you're not going to get my money. And I'm like, that's fine. I want you to get home safe. And I want to see you the next time you can come out, you know?
Yeah.
And I've never had anyone like be mad at me for asking that. And I appreciate that because, well, except for that dude, I guess. But, you know, he wasn't like yelling and throwing things. He was just kind of like miffed. And then he came back and thanked me. So, yeah.
Any scary situations you've had to jump in and save somebody, someone who's in danger?
I think for the most part, like
at
people
Urban Grand,
have
a lot of bar fights.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean,
I take my earrings
dates,
out
right?
like every.
No, I'm
between
talking
five
about
and 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. They have a lot of bar fights.
Yeah, let me clarify. Not the bar fight. I'm talking about the bad date gone. You know, the date going bad.
Saving
somebody. And or it's, you know, something sketch that you see and you're like, okay, let me step in. Because, of course, I mean, that's obviously a thing, right?
I have seen some sketchy things happen. And as a bartender, I do listen all the time. It's like my ears are always on. And sometimes I hear things without even meaning to. I'm just like, I'm making a drink and I realize I've been listening to an entire conversation behind me. And it's like the like mama bear instinct kicks in. Especially if I see someone who frequently brings a different person in every time. I'll just kind of like keep an ear out just to make sure that it's usually, you know, like if it's a different woman every time, I want to make sure that she's safe. There's nothing sketchy going on. And that's not to say people can't go on as many first dates as they want to, because you absolutely can. And you should date as many people as you want to until you find the person you want to be with. It's my little caveat there. But like whenever my, what is that?
Sense.
I'm like, I don't know what I was about to do with that, but like my fingers above my head, but like my antenna is what I was going to go with. If that goes off, I trust that a lot.
Well, there's plenty of murder mysteries to show why you should pay attention.
Thank
to
you. Yeah. And I used to really deep dive in that in college too. Yeah. That was like one of the classes I took was a sociology class that made me a little aware of that.
True crime podcast.
Yeah. I don't listen to any true crime. My brain is too overactive for that. I'd probably like check over my shoulder more than I already do. But no, I forgot what the question was.
Well, you've seen some stuff and you've had to step in.
No, the two times I've really had to do anything, one time two dudes were mad about something that someone saw on Twitter, and I don't really, to this day, I have no clue what they're fighting about, but like, you know, one guy pushed his chair back and he was like, hey bro, and I was like, these are two guys who clearly don't know how to fight each other. Like, I'm like judging their stances and I'm like, none of y'all know what you're doing.
She's like,
oh,
no, he's nice.
Yeah, I was like and so like I just, this isn't like recommended, but I didn't like, it was just in the heat of the moment. I was like, look, I'm going to get in the middle of that and tell them to calm down. And I did. And I was like very assertive. And they both kind of looked at me like, wow, this girl is really loud and scary. And they were just like, fine. And they left. And I think for the most part, like if I'm not wearing like a tank top or like my arm muscles are sticking out, like people don't like expect me to be that person mm-hmm. that's going to jump in there and like tell them what to do. So that kind of shifts the dynamics already, which is to my benefit because I really don't want to fight anybody outside of the gym ever. I think that's like one of the misconceptions is I've heard some people think that like we're just like ready to fight at all times. And most of us who train martial arts, like the fact that we know how to fight makes us even less willing to fight
yeah.
because we understand the gravity of that situation. The other thing I've bumped into, it was someone was messing with one of my servers back in the day. And again, mama bear, I'm like, I'll fight for like someone else's safety more than for my own, honestly. But a guy was, you know, coming in, bothering her, yelling at her. And I was like, here we go. And I really did take my earrings out. Cause at the time I was wearing these like big dangly earrings. And I was like, man, if he goes for like my like keychain or my earrings, that'll be terrible. So like I took those out and then I went over to talk to him and I had to like be very verbally aggressive with him. So I like channeled my Ravenclaw instead of my Gryffindor, you know, used my words and it de-escalated the situation that way. But honestly, for the most part, like I've had to deal with people being rude, but no yeah. one really trying to fight, which is great.
Just heard of all these crazy situations, unfortunately, that, you know, girls get in bad situations on a date and the bartender says, well, order this if you feel unsafe. And
yeah. they have those like bathrooms sometimes.
Which is good, right? I mean that's a huge thing, making sure that relationship with the bartender.
I have mixed feelings about that actually.
Well, yes, I mean there's always the guy could be the wrong, I guess.
Well, no, can I sorry yeah, I'll yeah, just jump in there. The only mixed feelings I have about it, I like that system, that's cool. I just feel sad that we have to teach women to be very subversive with their ability to ask for help. I would rather teach women to be like grabbing the bartender and be like, hey, this guy is bothering me. I need your protection right now.
I got you.
You know, as opposed to be like, I'll have an angel shot. Because I feel like that speaks to, not to get all like philosophical on you and like jump off a cliff here, but I feel like that speaks to like the level that we ask women to subdue themselves and not being angry and not speaking up for ourselves. And I hate that. I want women to feel so empowered to just be
heavy.
Assertive.
That's good.
Yeah. So like, I would rather them be like, hey, if you are ever on a date, I want every bartender in that bar to understand that they can tell you like, hey, stay with me. Don't go home with him. I'm going to help yeah. you find a ride home and make sure you get home safe, which actually, now that we're talking about it, I've done twice.
Yeah.
There was a girl sitting at a bar with me once while I was bartending. It was late. And the guy kept being like, hey, let's go on a walk. Let's go on a walk. And she was like, I don't want to. And she was like, I don't want to. And he kept saying it. And finally, I was like, dude. And I slammed my hand on the bar in front of him to get his attention. I was like, hey. And he looked at me and I was like, she has said no to you so many times. Wow. Get the hell out of my bar right now. And I was like, and you stay right there. And she was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then after he left, I was like, she was like, I'm really hungry. Like, can I get some pizza? And I was like, yeah, go get. Well, actually, I was like, we'll get pizza. I like ordered pizza. So I was like, don't leave this bar. And then she stayed and we got an Uber for her. And like one of her friends showed up and she was like, thank you so much. I was saying no to him like the best I could, but like it wasn't enough and he wasn't listening. And I was like, no worries. I'm sorry it took me so long to jump in there. But like it was happening right in front of me. And it was one of those things where I was just like, no means no. And she said no to you plenty of times. And we're going to make sure.
I mean, it's instinctual for you. At some point, you're kind of like, all right, this is not.
Yeah, it kind of flies out.
Well, that's good.
I
agree with what you said earlier, though. I think that's a problem within a problem.
Yes. It's like, I like that we're addressing this situation. I just, for me and my idealistic brain, I would love to get to a point where women are just like looking at some guy next to them like, no, you're not going to touch me and I don't want to hang out with you and you're going to leave here and I'm going to stay here with this bartender. And hopefully that bartender is also ethical enough that they're going to take care of that person.
It's amazing how many bystanders just ignore that kind of stuff.
Yes.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Well, there was a whole show about it. Like, what would you do? I think it was on back in the day. It was like showed these crazy sketch situations or like crazy scenarios and just trying to see people's reaction. And if people jumped in, like if somebody took somebody's purse and started running, did anyone stop them?
Yeah.
It's like people don't know how to act when it's happening right in front of them. So,
right. There's a quote I'm obsessed with. It's the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference.
Yes.
Yeah. Elie Wiesel, Holocaust survivor.
Yeah.
And it's true. I think indifference is so damaging. You know, if you're willing to watch something happening that's terrible and you don't have any feeling about it one way or another, that says a lot about you as a person. And there are a lot of people that will just stand by, and even especially in this day and age, not just stand by and be indifferent, but stand by and film it.
Yeah.
And I
it's a whole separate issue.
Yeah. I did. Oh man, now that we're talking about it, I'm thinking about all these things. I had to take a guy's phone once because he was taking a picture of my butt, and I took his phone and deleted all of his photos, like every picture of everyone's butt he had on his phone. He was very unhappy about it. And I...
Sure he was.
I was like, all right, I know enough to know like I can't keep your phone and I can't damage your phone, but I'm gonna make sure you don't have any of these pictures you've been stockpiling. And then I kicked him out of my bar. So
well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Not all superheroes wear caps.
I was just thinking it. Thank you. Well done. Yeah. Well, Lord, thanks for coming on. I mean,
thank
we could talk
so
all day.
For having me. I know I want to keep talking all day.
No, but you definitely provide a lot of perspective. I think you know, your story resonates with especially, you know, our bartenders that we talk to here in Greenville. So glad to have you on.
Thank you.
To have you back on soon.
Yeah, I'd love to come back for sure. Come back on a day when I can, you know, sip some bourbon with you guys.
There definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Sounds good. Thanks, Laura.